Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakotans are following the U.S. trade talks with China and responding, much like the rest of the country, with uncertainty. U.S. Senator John Thune says the economy is growing and it's time to move forward with a new trade deal to take the pressure off farmers. Plus, Rapid City Stevens students speak out about In God We Trust. For all that and more, today we welcome John Hunter for our Dakota Political Junkies weekly segment. John is publisher of the Madison Daily Leader, and he joins us on the phone. Hey, John.
Hi, Lori.
How are you?
I'm terrific. Thanks for asking.
All right. Let's start with In God We Trust, because this is legislation that came out of our last state legislative session, and it was a requirement for schools to put the words In God We Trust on some sort of plaque or art piece or something, but it must be displayed prominently in a school. And some students are starting to have a few things to say about that. Not a big surprise that some of the high school students would speak up and speak out.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? The students at Stevens, I think, are being very respectful and going about this the right way. And they understand the law, and at least from the things that I've read about that. What they're doing, Lori, and you, I know you've read this as well, that they are proposing an artwork that does say In God We Trust, but it also has other deities in there, like Allah and, you know, I don't even know all who the other deities are, but kind of listed
it's
in there.
It's Allah, and it's Yahweh, and it's Brahman and Buddha, I think I saw on there. It said, in science we trust, in ourselves we trust. It was sort of a starburst, if you will,
to imagine it. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting piece. And I think they, again, the law requires this, state law requires this, but it's under approval of the principal of each school. So it can be a plaque or a big sign or student artwork or that sort of thing. So the next step, of course, is that that a principal is going to have to kind of go forward with this. But, yeah, it's interesting. They're blending, of course, the First Amendment right to freedom of religion, and you know, Congress cannot prevent you from, or cannot propose a particular religion. And so, yeah, it's an interesting, you know, having seen the artwork, it doesn't seem disrespectful, and I think the students are being respectful as well.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily like a finished artwork, it's more of a, you know, a mock-up of, you know, a direction that it could go. And I'm curious, because when we talked to South Dakota Education Secretary Ben Jones, one of the things he mentioned was that students might end up in some places, you know, proposing artwork, and that could look different in every school. Put yourself in this, you know, the shoes of an administrator or a superintendent. Is this a frustrating thing because it's you know, one more thing to deal with on top of everything else, or is it really an educational opportunity to talk about what In God We Trust means and to talk about the First Amendment in school? Do you think it's an opportunity or more of an obstacle to getting on with the rest of learning that needs to happen?
I think it's an opportunity, and I understand your question very clearly that it has both sides to that, but I think it's a chance to talk about the Constitution. It's a chance to talk about America. It's a chance to talk about, you know, In God We Trust is a national motto, besides just being something that the South Dakota legislature passed, and it's been on money and other such things. So it is part of who we are, and so there's a civics lesson that kind of comes out of this, and again, if both sides are respectful of each other, I think it's the kind of good academic experience or debate that we'd hope that students, you know, if at some point people start getting crazy and threatening each other and burning down buildings or something bad.
Yeah. Or, you know, vandalizing signs, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, but at this point, I think it's a great lesson. Wouldn't it be interesting to see how 200 and some different school districts handle this.
Right. That's quite a story developing right now. So let's talk a little bit about trade, because that's another story that's developing, and sometimes it's developing in a predictable direction, which is, you know, not a whole lot of resolution on the horizon, it seems. Are farmers, you know, are farmers getting frustrated with this? They see, up until now, it seems like they have been pretty on board with, you know, something needs to change, but they really have to be feeling the pressure right now.
Agreed, and I think you summarized it well. That I think there was sort of a grace period for the we're willing to suffer for a while for better deals. But you know, American farmers have had great trade deals for a long time. I mean, we sell a lot of agricultural commodities overseas, and we have good relationships. And it's, you know, we agriculture in South Dakota have tried to build those markets for many years. And so to be used as part of this negotiation, I think, was something I said, yeah, we'll kind of participate in this. But now if all of a sudden Chinese aren't buying our soybeans and the price plummets and we're underwater on it, yeah, that's, I think, our patience would run out. And I think that's kind of what's going on, I think. And I appreciated John Thune's comments, like, you know, we wanted to get better trade deals, but let's kind of wrap this up. Let's just kind of not have this escalating fight go on forever. And in South Dakota, where you have not only commodity price challenges, you've also got weather and such things that could restrain this year's crop. I think farmers are deeply concerned.
And one of Senator Thune's thoughts or points in his recent press release was, the economy is doing really well, but we could be doing actually better if we were able to sort of, you know, wrap it up a little bit and move forward past this issue. Do you think it's clouding sort of the, you know, the big picture of, you know, what someone like Senator Thune wants people to notice about the national economy right now?
Well, there's, you know, every recovery, Lori, is uneven. And that is, you know, we think of the economy kind of a rising tide raises all ships, but there's always some that kind of accelerate faster than others. And so this one in particular, you know, unemployment rates are very low. And so in some cases, people having trouble finding workers. And we can talk about that a little bit, too, if you'd like. And then, but that other parts like agriculture and actually the trade things, disputes are affecting the economy in other places negatively. You know, I think we'll see consumer goods, at least those we get from China, will jump in price very quickly. I think there are some, you know, there have been some other trade disputes with Europe and even Canada. We're aware of newsprint, of course, had a 30-35% tariff on that for a while. So every recovery, and Senator, I think you're referring to Senator Thune's piece where he said, hey, economy's going great, but there's always some areas that aren't part of that, and I think that's what he'd like to see fill in.
Right. Farmers' personal income has declined by nearly $12 billion is what the report from the Commerce Department is through the first 3 months of 2019, and Federal Reserve is expecting that trend to continue.
Well, Lori, let me ask you this question. That is, do these subsidies now that the administration is proposing, there was one earlier and there's now another one proposed, does that make up for that?
Well, it seems to me like every farmer that we've talked to has said that's not the full-time solution. That's we don't want aid. We want markets again and again and again. Do you think that's philosophical? Do you think that's a real tangible thing? Does it make how much of a difference does that make? Because that seems to be the fairly consistent, not that we've interviewed dozens of you know, farmers on this show in the last 2 weeks, but certainly consistently they say, you know, we're not looking for an aid package.
I think most Americans are like that. They would prefer to produce something. And even farmers, you know, who might have crop insurance and they get hailed out, even if you get the same amount of money, it's not satisfying whatsoever. I mean, you went into farming because you like growing things, and taking it to market and getting checks is a very satisfying part of that equation. And so if it's wiped out by a May hailstorm and they send you a check for that, it's not nearly as satisfying to do that. So, yeah, I think most farmers would much prefer to be part of a market economy rather than a subsidized situation.
And, you know, I was just reading something early this morning from Congressman Dusty Johnson talking about being on a committee, in his leadership role, talking about SNAP benefits and, you know, the dignity of work. And so let's go back to this concept of, you know, really low unemployment. You know, what does full employment look like in America? What does it look like in South Dakota? And then bring in this conversation about immigration visas and the visitor industry, particularly in the state, feeling some crunch there of just finding people to work.
Yeah, it's a different circumstance than we're used to. A lot of people don't realize that these immigration visas are very useful for South Dakota, certainly in tourism, but in agriculture, and really in some other areas too. And recently dairy, I think, has become a big user of these. And these are temporary visas that people can work or earn time in the United States. I think they said the average time spent is 8 or 10 months or something to that effect. And so, but tourism in South Dakota depends a lot on it. I remember going to some, I can't remember which tourist attraction in the Black Hills, but they would actually, on their name badges, would have their name and the country that they were from.
Right.
And it was usually a conversation point that someone comes up to that tourist attraction, oh, you're from, you know, this particular European
right.
country or a South American country. And it was kind of a something to chat about. And so to have those be part of this mix of the border wall and so forth has created a lot of challenges for South Dakota businesses. And you're right, if you have 2.8% unemployment, it's going to be hard to fill those seasonal jobs in the Black Hills.
Right. And for people who are, you know, critical and say, well, why don't you, why don't you pay more, for example, so that people, a lot of the people in the visitor industry are saying there just aren't enough. I mean, the influx, unless you live out there and have really seen the difference between, you know, a town like Custer in January and a town like Custer in July, it's they're two different towns.
Right. Yeah. And for better or worse, that is a seasonal kind of thing, and it's not in a position to support a full-time thing. Now, the nice part for them, at least, is for a portion of that tourism season, then students can often fill in some sort of thing. So you're going to school at SDSU or Dakota State, and you're done in early May, and you can work until Labor Day. That helps, but the season extends a little bit beyond that. It probably goes a month or so in either direction, and that's, I think, where the real crunch is coming.
Some of these issues are just not as, they're complicated.
Yeah, this uneven kind of recovery that you talk about, that not everyone benefits equally, some more and some less, and that's, I think we'll see that. I'm kind of curious in the change in dairy in South Dakota.
Right.
You know, that's grown up so much in cheese factories and so forth, and even then you get into the kind of the robot milking operations and so forth. I think it's a really an interesting industry to watch evolve.
Well, and as we move into 5G technology and AI and precision ag, it's going to be a whole new future for farm families and for all of us.
Absolutely. We'll be here to watch it.
And on that note, we still want to carry cash around in our pockets. And you wrote you wrote an editorial, which I'm, because, you know, I, of course, you know, I like books that are made out of paper and cloth and glue, and I like cash that's made out of, you know, paper and ink. And you thought it was so important that you would write about it for your editorial in the Madison Daily Leader. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with cash and people willing to accept it.
Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon, of course. Everyone's aware of how the increased use of credit and debit cards and the ease of use at stores and restaurants. And so those have largely replaced checks, you know, which had some challenges as far as being bad checks and so forth. The nice thing about a debit or credit card is it gets approved right away. The merchant is guaranteed his or her money. The customer gets that thing. If they don't have the money in their account, they don't get the the product. But the challenge, at least a little bit, is that people are using these so much, it's also replacing cash to a degree. And so I just noticed this. I was traveling yesterday and standing in line for literally a soda or something like that might be a dollar or two, and everybody was paying with debit card, and it was actually slower in that case than it would be just to put $2.25 down. But that's not the problem. The problem in some cities is the fact that some people with lower incomes don't have checking accounts or don't have credit card status, to do that. And some stores are refusing to accept cash and just saying we're electronic only. And some cities, San Francisco is one, Philadelphia is another. The state of New Jersey have all recently passed laws that say, as a merchant, you need to be able to accept cash as well. That's only fair to all the citizens.
Well, and it seems like we just went through this conversation in South Dakota with title lending. And, you know, if you are a person who doesn't have good credit and you need to have credit, well, then you're going to have to pay someone to help you get that credit card so you can buy your, you know, gallon of milk at the grocery store if they don't take cash. And that furthers the income gap, really.
Yeah, it does. I hadn't thought those together, Lori.
Yes. Somebody will fill that gap. Payday
lending. Yeah, that's an important thing. But yeah, cash. I mean, in some cases, that ironically might be safer.
Right.
If you have $5 in cash or $10, you could lose that. But if you have a debit or credit card, you lose that, you could lose a lot more possibly. Although the banks and so forth, the credit card companies are really good about absorbing those fraudulent cases, but still a lot of hassle that goes with that and so on. So I think for small items especially, I think it might be safer to carry a few of those green presidents around.
All right. Well, here's my thing. I went out of town recently, took an airplane ride to the East Coast for a college visit, and for the first time ever, I put a credit card on my phone in the Apple Wallet, so you can just wave your phone in front of something. I have no idea how much I spent. So I'm going with cash for my own financial benefit, because you wave that phone and you're like, I don't know what that was. I just paid for something.
You just bought a car. You didn't even know.
John Hunter, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk with you. We appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Lori.